The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
The Honorable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The NDP government is cutting 22 youth mental health workers at the IWK. At the same time, the government is growing administration within the Department of Health. My question to the Premier, how can he justify this?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the Leader of the Opposition just received a full explanation of the situation at the IWK, and in fact, what the government is doing is delivering better service to young people who have mental health problems that was set out. And I'd just like to correct the last part of his first question, which is in fact, Mr. Speaker, that the health administration is being cut. We have gone from where we were left by the previous government, which was some of the highest levels of health administration in the country, now to below the national average.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I would suggest that the Premier read the document that was just introduced. Maybe the DHAs are cutting administration, but it's certainly not being cut in the Department of Health, Mr. Speaker. If anything, it's increasing. Mr. Speaker, the question was very simple. How can the Premier leave Nova Scotia families who need their support on their own at the same time increasing funding to the Department of Health Administration?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, as usual, Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition, of course, tries to construct a fantasy about what's happening in the department. But I would ask the Minister of Health to explain yet again to him what...
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm very pleased to have an opportunity to tell members of the House that it was this government, this Premier, that combined two health departments into one, that eliminated a deputy minister, that eliminated a political staff to the minister in doing that, that eliminated other administrative staff, Mr. Speaker. So quite the contrary to what the Leader of the Opposition is saying. It is the exact opposite, Mr. Speaker. We have eliminated administration, and we have brought health administration below the national average, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, contrary to what the Minister of Health has just stated, there is absolutely no question they combined two departments, Mr. Speaker. But the fact of the matter is, with their combined department, Mr. Speaker, administrative cost and senior management of the Department of Health has gone up, Mr. Speaker, under this administration. Mr. Speaker, this government is more content to spend money in senior management than the Department of Health than support family and children at risk in our province. The question to the Premier is, when are you going to support family and children at risk in our community?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, after years of neglect by the former Liberal government and former Conservative government, Mr. Speaker, in fact, those services to children who need assistance, in fact, is being provided. And as was pointed out by the Minister of Health, this year, with respect to mental health services, not only was it protected with respect to the IWK, but she directed that portion of the budget be protected right across the district health authorities.
Before we continue, I remind all members in the legislature that during question period, all electronic devices, BlackBerries, laptops, and other devices are to be put away for the period and question period. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, today we learn that a typical Nova Scotia family will be paying $4,000 more in extra HST as a result of decisions of this Premier and this government. That is a far cry from what they were promised in the last election, Mr. Speaker. It was a cynical promise that the Premier made to the people of Nova Scotia then. It remains a cynical promise to the people of Nova Scotia today. And so I ask the Premier, will he now apologize to the people of Nova Scotia for making and breaking such a cynical pre-election promise on the HST?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the increase in the HST took place as a result of the legacy of the former government, Mr. Speaker. The Conservative government left us with a structural deficit of something in the order of $1.4 billion, Mr. Speaker. If there is anyone who ought to be ashamed of their record, they sat on that side of the House, and Mr. Speaker, they sat there for good reason.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that answer is a sham, just like this budget is a sham, just like every budget that that government has brought in is a sham. And it was started on the very first day by a sham. Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that the audited financial statements for the year 2009 contained a surplus, an audited, real, honest-to-God surplus of $19,700,000. I will table for the Premier's proof the message from the Minister for that year, the last year, before they took office, signed by the current Minister of Finance, by the way, the member for Halifax West. Halifax Fairview. In light of that fact, Mr. Speaker, will the Premier finally admit now in his fourth budget it all started with nothing but a sham?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, four of the most noted economists in our region sat down and looked at the position of this province and what it was that we were left with after the election. What conclusion did they come to, Mr. Speaker? What they said was that the former Conservative government left this province in a $1.4 billion hole that we had to pay off. Well, Mr. Speaker, we are finally at a point where we can pay it off. And the people of Nova Scotia are going to reap the benefits.
Honourable the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, apparently the word of the Auditor General is not good enough for the Premier, just like it wasn't good enough for the member from Halifax, Chibucto. But it is the word of the Auditor General that reports to the people of Nova Scotia, the very people who now pay $4,000 more in each and every family because that Premier broke his promise, the very people that are now $6,000 more in debt because that Premier broke his promise not to run a deficit or drive up our debt. Now, Mr. Speaker, the Premier has the outright gall to make a new cynical pre-election promise about the HST. My question to the Premier, how can you expect Nova Scotians to believe him now?
Hey! Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the former government put in place cost increases over the coming years. They put in place program. They built programming on the basis of revenues from commodities that went through the floor, Mr. Speaker. They left this province in the worst position that had been in for more than 20 years, Mr. Speaker. And that was coupled with, of course, 20 years of some of the worst economic performance in our history. Mr. Speaker, we on this side of the House finally have been able to pay off the credit card charges that were run up by the Conservative government. We've gotten the province back to balance, Mr. Speaker. We're on the precipice of the greatest prosperity that our province has ever known. That's where this government has taken this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, for the last 3 years, the Minister of Finance, leading up to his presentation of the budget in this House, has gone around the province asking Nova Scotians to live within their means, Mr. Speaker. At the same time, Mr. Speaker, the Department of Finance has grown by over 30%. My question to the Premier, when is he going to ask the Minister of Finance to live within his means?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, all of the departments of government live within its means. I'm very proud to say that this year, for the third consecutive year, Mr. Speaker, we have come in under the budget forecast, the first time that that has happened in at least 45 years. Something, Mr. Speaker, that neither of the other parties can say they did.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the NDP government has told school boards there will be a reduction of 3%. They also told school boards across this province they were going to have to absorb the cost of living within side of their fiscal envelopes, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, can the Premier explain to Nova Scotian why he's willing to cut classroom teachers and supports and students at the same time he's increasing the staff at the Department of Education?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what he's referring to, but I'm sure it's incorrect, as it usually is, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I can say is that we are calling upon all the departments of government, all of the funded organizations that we fund, whether they happen to be district health authorities or school boards or municipal units, to recognize that because of the expenditures made by the former government, because of the position that they put this province in, it is necessary to exercise restraint to ensure that we can afford to pay for the public services that we require. Thankfully, the Minister of Finance has been able to, over the last 3 years, ensure that we get back to balance and that we are able to, in fact, properly support our public services.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Speaker, I think at the beginning of the Premier's answer, he's suggesting we shouldn't believe the numbers that were put in his document today. Mr. Speaker, we've been trying to tell Nova Scotians that for the last 3 years. Speaker, the Premier might consider this a game. The Premier might consider this a game, but in fact, we have the lowest funded education system in the entire country, Mr. Speaker, and under this government, we've seen cut after cut, year after year. Can the Premier explain why he believes it is more important to invest in senior management in the Department of Education than it is to invest in classroom teachers and supports for students?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, and it is unfortunate that the Leader of the Opposition engages in this kind of, misleading of the people of the province. You know, Mr. Speaker, so let me just set the record absolutely straight. This year, Mr. Speaker, in this province, the Minister of Education, in cooperation with the Minister of Finance, will provide to the people of Nova Scotia the highest per student funding in the history of our province, Mr. Speaker, and we will have among the lowest class sizes in our history.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier told the press yesterday that he was planning to slowly reverse his HST hike of 2009. However, people will have to wait until at least 2014 to see any reduction. Given that in 2009 the Premier broke his election promise not to raise taxes if he was elected, how can we trust the Premier in his latest HST promise?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, when we set out the path back to balance, what we said to the people of Nova Scotia is, you know, there was no way that we could have known the mess that was going to be left behind by the former government. And what that means is that it is necessary, as the economic panel recommended, to raise revenues, to cut expenses, and to grow the economy. Mr. Speaker, we have done all three of those things. What the people of Nova Scotia have seen is a plan that is working and one that will bring us back to balance and allow us to restore the HST to 13%.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier says that he had no way of knowing. However, I take exception to that because our leader had a way of knowing. We knew. We didn't make the election promises. That's absolutely the case. There was a certain element of caution.
I'm telling the truth.
Exactly. Mr. Speaker, once elected, the NDP government hiked the HST and they hiked 1,400 user fees at the same time. The cost of electricity is soaring, as we know, and food as well. Price of gas has never been as high in recent memory, maybe never. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are definitely struggling to make ends meet. There are no measures in today's budget to help Nova Scotians cope with higher living costs. Why is the Premier ignoring these pressing needs?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to recommend to the member opposite that you actually read the budget. What you'll find, if we have increased the affordability tax credit, we have increased the disability tax credit, Mr. Speaker. She might remember that we also, the honourable member might also remember that we took the HST off of home heat, something that her party voted against.
The honourable member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think the Premier is missing the point that there are some pressing costs that all Nova Scotians are facing and that the piecemeal approach in the budget is not hitting Nova Scotia Power. It's not touching gasoline prices. It won't drop the cost of transportation and gasoline. This budget doesn't offer any relief to average Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, how can the Premier expect anyone to believe his self-serving current HST promise when this budget so clearly ignores the pressing needs of average Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Again, Mr. Speaker, I just think she ought to read the budget. We will return all of the income tax paid by seniors who receive the GIS, Mr. Speaker. We will increase the funding to students who are going to university, Mr. Speaker. We will increase the level of the affordable tax credit. We will increase the personal allowance and EISA. Mr. All these measures are designed to make life just a little bit better for people. I'm sure they can understand.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Today I tabled a petition with 3,257 signatures, a petition started by 11-year-old Erica Wright, who is with us here today. The Minister of Health supported a decision to eliminate emergency surgery in Inverness. 3,257 constituents of mine disagree. How can eliminating emergency surgery mean better care sooner when people in my area are told by the NDP Minister of Health that they must travel 2+ hours to get it?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what occurred in the Inverness Hospital was a review of the surgeries that were being done there over an 18-month period. The District Health Authority found that after hours and on weekends, at least 80% of the surgeries could have been scheduled during daytime hours. The pressure on healthcare workers to provide 24-hour coverage for surgery was affecting the scheduling of staff in that facility. And, Mr. Speaker, the District Health Authority made a decision to have surgery conducted during the day. And if an emergency surgery occurred at night, then that would be dealt with in the regional hospitals. And, Mr. Speaker, as I understand, the District Health Authority is now reviewing all of the surgical programs at the Inverness Hospital.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the review came by way of the efforts of the community. Mr. Speaker, this is another example of NDP insensitivity to rural Nova Scotia. The District Health Authority has recognized that their decision was made too quickly and without consultation. Mr. Speaker, we have seen the Premier travel to Ottawa to ensure Nova Scotians get a comparable quality of care as found in other provinces, yet here within Nova Scotia, his government supports decisions that leave people who live in rural Nova Scotia behind. Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, will the Minister reassure Erica and our community that their safety is her top priority and promise to restore emergency surgery here today?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I first want to say that I'm probably as aware of the needs of people in rural Nova Scotia for health care as any member of this House, given that I come from the Strait of Canso. My mother still lives there, Mr. Speaker, and my father had a fair amount of care, excellent care, at St. Martha's and in the surrounding area in the past year and a half, Mr. Speaker. I am very committed to high-quality, safe health care in all parts of our province, including in Inverness. And, Mr. Speaker, we will await the outcome of the review, an independent review, with respect to services, surgical services in that particular facility before any final decision will be made.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we have a good thing going in Inverness. The care has a local flavour, and in my mind it is better. I have seen it myself with my family, and I even have marks on my own body to prove it. The community has raised $2.3 million to support the recent hospital expansion, a significant amount of money. It is time that this government starts treating the Inverness Hospital as the asset that it is to our Nova Scotia health system. For the sake of a few thousand dollars and the few nights of the year when the people need it, are not the people of the western side of Cape Breton Island worth it?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member and I do agree that they have an excellent health care facility there in Inverness, and that community is fortunate to have such an excellent health care facility, and they will continue to have that facility with a very high-functioning emergency department, for example, Mr. Speaker, to deal with emergencies. However, the question of surgery... Surgery is not done in every hospital, and some types of surgery are only done in certain places. We all know that. People in Nova Scotia travel routinely for surgery that cannot be done in a facility close to where they live because the equipment isn't there, because perhaps the specialists aren't there. As I said, Mr. Speaker, this is complex. We're looking at the review, and I will await the outcome of that review before any final decision is made.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Halifax Shipyard will get up to $260 million in a forgivable loan for upgrades to handle $25 billion worth of combat vessels. Mr. Speaker, everyone in this province and everyone in this country knows Irving is the best company to build these vessels, plain and simple. But in total, Mr. Speaker, government is delivering $260 million in a forgivable loan to Irving. This is a tremendous amount of public funds to give to a company, Mr. Speaker. So, my question for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism, from what department is this money coming from?
Good question, Member. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it gives me great pleasure to rise on this very, very important issue and this very important question. And the money for the ships will be spread out over the extent of the contract. It will not be a lump sum of money up front. And I just want to really emphasize that the money, up to $260 million, will be, it's an incentive-based pot of money that will come from economic and rural development and tourism, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, since May of last year, we've seen the ads and promotions of ships start here. We know it was a good initiative, and the Nova Scotia Liberal Party and our leader have been championing this idea. Mr. Speaker, other jurisdictions were up front with what incentives they were prepared to offer for the shipbuilding contract, but the government did not tell Nova Scotia taxpayers. Mr. Speaker, government was asked last year whether or not public funds would be involved, and the NDP government refused to tell us. So my question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism, how long has the NDP government known this agreement would cost Nova Scotians $260 million?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to make it clear, this is the most important event, certainly in my lifetime. And one of the things we did not want to do, Mr. Speaker, is we didn't want to jeopardize the risk of not getting the contract. It was important because there were negotiations going on at a very, very high level. It was important that we keep our cards close to our chest, as well did Irving. Mr. Speaker, when an agreement was signed, we revealed what the numbers were. The agreement was just signed, and I don't think it's been quite a week yet, Mr. Speaker. So we revealed the numbers at an appropriate time, and when it was at no risk or little risk to the problems of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And certainly we all recognize the importance of the ship's contract. And in terms of the high level of conversations, I think the taxpayers and Nova Scotians and the Nova Scotia legislature would probably qualify as the being included in the high level of discussions. We're asking the questions Nova Scotians are asking us because the NDP government is out of touch with Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. We know that Irving is a first-rate company. We know that it's the best company for the job, and that's why it was chosen. But, Mr. Speaker, taxpayers deserve to know their contribution up front so they could evaluate the costs and benefits of this massive deal. So my question to the minister, why didn't the NDP government tell us a year ago what our provincial contributions from taxpayers' dollars would be?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, I will pass that down to the Premier at his request.
Honourable the Premier.
I've got an answer from the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it is a question that bears a response, and this is it, Mr. Speaker. Under the terms of the National Shipbuilding Procurement Strategy, we were bidding along with Irving to ensure that we would be successful in getting the $25 billion combat vessel contract, which we did. Mr. Speaker, the return on that to the people of Nova Scotia will be somewhere in the vicinity of $2.6 billion in tax revenues, thousands of jobs at the shipyards. And as Mr. Irving put it, had we not done that, they would have a parking lot down on the waterfront instead of a shipyard, Mr. Speaker. You see, Mr. Speaker, that was the way that for 20 years the Liberals and Conservatives did business, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, we have a message for them. Those times are gone. You had your 20 years. It's over.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Stand up, sir.
Thank you.
Daryl, you're going to be adopted by me.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, yesterday, the Utility and Review Board in Newfoundland and Labrador said it didn't have enough comparative information to approve the Muskrat Falls project. But the government there quickly promised to get all the information by June and open the legislature for debate. And I'll table a copy of that information, Mr. Speaker. The NDP government has time and time again rejected doing the hard work put all the possibilities on the table and to do a proper cost-benefit analysis. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Energy, will the Minister commit to getting all the information about all possible ways to get affordable green energy for Nova Scotians and doing a proper cost-benefit study now before we get too far down the wrong path?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for his question. Certainly, we're in close contact with what's happening in Newfoundland and Labrador, and we know that there's been various studies there through Manitoba Hydro and through Nalcor, and we're keeping a close contact with them. And certainly we do know here in our province we have the Utility and Review Board that will be looking at all those previous studies and will be bringing in their own expertise as required.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Later this year, the power company will file an application with the Nova Scotia Utility and Review Board asking all of us to pay $1.2 billion for the subsea cable. Look out, Mr. Speaker. Here comes another rate increase for Nova Scotians. And there's the information on that as well, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Minister should be able to tell us now if this is affordable for Nova Scotia families and businesses. My question to the Minister is, how much does $1.2 billion equate to an average family's household power bill, and what percent increase will that be?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We do know that this renewable green energy from Labrador will certainly provide stability in our province, will provide 35 years of stable rates that we cannot get anywhere else. Really, the cost of it is to be determined by the Utility Review Board after they've done a very thorough investigation of all the details, all the information, all the expertise that's out there, and they'll determine exactly what that rate shall be.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a mayor is in Senate to build big capital assets because they earn a guaranteed rate on the investment. The Muskrat Falls project is the Cadillac of big, expensive projects, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians wouldn't buy a car without knowing how much the bill was going to be. So my question to the Minister, whose side is the Minister on? The people of Nova Scotia who want a cost-benefit analysis of the Muskrat Falls project, or the power company who's trying to keep it quiet?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, this project provides us with reliable power at stable rates for the next 35 years, and we cannot get that anywhere else. Our Utility and Review Board has the duty and the obligation to protect Nova Scotians, to make sure the best possible rate is there, and in the end, we're going to have good, stable, renewable energy for decades to come.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Liberal caucus has supported the Irving Shipyard from day one, and we will continue to do so. They are an excellent example of business success in this province. What's worrying me is that one of the most successful companies in this province could not get a loan from the private sector. They are on the cusp of receiving $25 billion of government money, and they could not get private financing, obviously. Private capital is afraid of Nova Scotia, even in the light of the Irving Shipyard contract. So my question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism. What does it say about the state of our economy when one of the most successful companies in our province could not access private capital?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Irving Company approached the province of Nova Scotia. They made us aware of this shipbuilding bid. They asked for our assistance. What we did, Mr. Speaker, we weighed the consequences. We looked at this. When we seen what our investment was going to be in the return on that investment, Mr. Speaker, and I'll use the word that I think I've heard a member from one of the opposition parties use, that it was a no-brainer for us, Mr. Speaker. $2.8 billion return on this investment, Mr. Speaker, it's considered as a good one.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We know that the Irving story is an excellent example of success and certainly a reason for optimism. While I support their efforts, I'm concerned that the business environment in Nova Scotia is so poor that they could not access private capital. The Premier continually tells Nova Scotians that economic prosperity is only a day away, but it does not seem that private capital agrees. And if the Minister of Community Services wants to talk about Business 101, we can talk about job targets, and we can talk about all these things that we're not allowed to ask questions, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the people in Nova Scotia and the tax dollars that the government uses. Is that where we're at in this House, Mr. Speaker? This government had 3 years to address our lack of economic competitiveness, and they continue to insist that we'll wait until tomorrow for things to get better. We're dead last as a province in this country in economic growth, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians can't wait. Our businesses can't wait. We cannot afford this government. So my question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism, why does the government continue to pursue policies that chase private capital away from this province?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my first answer is that we were last. That's no longer the case. We were last, and now, Mr. Speaker, under this government, we've seen the economic fortunes of this province grow. And Mr. Speaker, for the first time, this province has a plan that's working, and we are going to stick to it, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As long as businesses struggle to access capital, our economy will struggle. As long as businesses struggle to access capital, our government will continue to sign checks. Our province's economy is struggling, and this government keeps making things worse. The worst growth in the province, Minister. The very worst growth. Worst growth in the country. Yeah, congratulations on your record. Congratulations to you and the Minister. Yeah, you're doing a great job steering our economy. As long as pools of capital for businesses as large and successful as Irving are dried up, businesses of every size need to worry. So my question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism, why is this government dragging its heels and failing to address what is clearly a crisis of capital in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, the member has his history confused. Mr. Speaker, for 20 years, up until the time we came into government, this province was last in the country. Mr. Speaker, under our regime, this province has turned that ship around, Mr. Speaker. No pun intended.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism. The Minister has a number of business advisory boards at his disposal, including the Industrial Expansion Fund Advisory Committee, the New Jobs Fund Board, the Economic Investment Committee, and even the Shipstart Here Steering Committee. I have a very simple question to the Minister. Which of these august bodies did he consult before committing to lending the Irvings $304 million?
That's right.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, first, I will say that the IEF is no longer, so that board is gone. But Mr. Speaker, we consult with all of our advisory councils when we move forward on initiatives.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia has become the banker to the Irvings. Not just any banker, but a very forgiving banker. And so my question to the Minister is this. Given that he consulted with all these groups, will he commit to releasing all the details, all the discussions, all the paperwork around how the government decided to lend the Irvings $260 million in a forgivable loan?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's a...
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd hate to think what it would be like in here if we had lost that contract. You know, those committees, Mr. Speaker, what they are is they give advice. They advise myself as minister on transactions that that come forward. We value their opinion, their views. That's why they are there, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we will continue. We will continue over the life of this government to make valuable use of those committees and those boards.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to think that we could live in a province where we win a contract like that on merit and don't need to lend $260 million to the Irvings and then write it off, because we're already a competitive, business-friendly province. That's what all Nova Scotians want. And so if the minister is so sure, why won't he just say yes? We will turn over all the documents so that every Nova Scotian who's being asked to give them $300 million can make the decision for themselves about whether he protected their interests or not.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you know, we've heard Mr. Irving say himself that if it hadn't been for this government, that they wouldn't have got that contract. Mr. Speaker, this is a time when all parties and all people of the province of Nova Scotia should be celebrating a win for Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Recently, the IWK made changes to the way it manages assessments for children and youth on their wait lists. In order to accommodate these changes, the IWK laid off treatment staff and reduced the availability of inpatient beds in the ACT program, so wait times for initial assessments can be reduced up front. Mr. Speaker, I, like many Nova Scotian families who have benefited from the ACT program, understand the need for timely access to treatment. They also very much value the treatment they have received from the program. So will the Minister of Health and Wellness explain how taking from Peter on the treatment side to pay Paul on the assessment side is providing better mental health care for children and youth in the province?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would hope that the Honourable Member and I could at least agree that the system where only a few children got services, but while the vast majority of children and youth got nothing in terms of mental health services, represented a system that was broken and that change was necessary. And Mr. Speaker, the people who are best able to determine what change is appropriate are the people who are the clinicians who work in the system, who developed a mental health strategy and plan to turn that around. And Mr. Speaker, this is what the IWK are doing. It will result in better care sooner for more children and adolescents, Mr. Speaker, and I fully support that approach.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister knows she is defending the indefensible. When you just wipe off 300 names, call 600 others, and give them treatment or offer assessment and treatment sometime in the future, where is it really going? She knows full well that 2 years of DHA budget cuts, including cuts to the IWK mental health budget, is forcing them to focus on freeing up money for assessments by cutting back on treatment. Mr. Speaker, this minister would have been the first person on her feet fighting the injustice of short-sighted decisions, yet today she defends the decision. This minister knows full well that this health cut decisions made by the NDP government is what forced the IWK to make this decision in the first place. So, Mr. Speaker, given the minister has had a few days to think about what is happening at the IWK, will she now admit that timely access, proper treatment produces better outcomes for patients?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much. You know, Mr. Speaker, it's very sad that some people don't want things to improve. They don't want to see changes. They're quite content with the status quo. where only a few people get access to services and the vast majority get nothing whatsoever, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, we are making changes in the mental health system. These changes will result in more programs being offered at the community level, and this is the right thing to do, Mr. Speaker, and I fully stand behind these changes. These, in fact, are the changes that I have fought for more than 25 years as a social worker who's worked in mental health, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. It doesn't look like the Minister was in too much of a hurry 3 years later and finally making a move. Mr. Speaker, if you speed up assessments and don't have appropriate residential or community-based mental health programs to ensure timely access to treatment, you simply move children and youth from one wait list to another. And the mental health providers are telling us that right now across this province. The NDP healthcare cuts are forcing the DHAs like the IWK to fund improvements in access by cutting programs that provide treatment, and that is wrong. Will the minister admit that when you pay for faster assessments by cutting treatment programs, you are impacting patient care?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, as I said, these changes will result in better care sooner for a much larger group of children. Additionally, kids that need urgent care will continue to get urgent care. Nothing has changed in this regard. The 22 workers, youth care workers that provide custodial care, essentially at nights and on weekends, will still see a complement of 120 youth care workers in that facility providing care, Mr. Speaker. So, you know, this is a model that will see faster, better results for more families. It is the right thing to do, and I still stand fully behind this model, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, for 53 years, Talbot House provided residential addiction treatment for men in Cape Breton. Talbot House recently, abruptly, closed its doors and left the people of Cape Breton with a whole lot of questions. Will the Minister of Community Services lift the shroud of secrecy and tell the men and their families who rely on these services why the Minister closed the doors and removed this vital service from this community?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, we know that the recovery houses that we have throughout the province are vitally important, and we have supported those. And in fact, we were not responsible for closing it. So I would think the Honourable Member should get her information straight. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it is the responsibility of this minister to ensure that her department can properly manage its programs and guarantee a continuity of service. People in Cape Breton are wondering what other local, accessible, comparable programs have been made available to men needing these services.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to say that every person that was in that recovery house was well taken care of. They have a placement that they're satisfied with. And the fact is that that is another organization that is run by a board of directors. The board of directors made the decision, not community services.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the people of Eastern Passage learned that this government was making good on election promise from the minister, or for the member from Cole Harbour Eastern Passage. The Premier announced $15 million for a high school at Eastern Passage, where the residents do very much want one, which we understand. But this wasn't on the Halifax Regional School Board's election priority list, so it must be on the NDP's re-election priority list. My question to the Minister of Education: will she please explain today why she chose to circumvent the Halifax Regional School Board's needs-based process in favour of a politically motivated process?
Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very proud to stand here and to answer that. As part of Kids and Learning First, a part of our plan, we were very clear that we were going to increase our trades education, our skilled trades education in Nova Scotia, and we have started that work. We wanted to make sure that we got going as soon as we could to meet the needs of the industry and to meet the needs of our students to give them the opportunities that they need. So we making sure that we're following our plan, Kids and Learning First. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in April 2009, the Premier said in a news story, we want to make sure that those are the priorities that the school boards have asked for. Well, Mr. Speaker, times have changed. The government asked school boards to update their capital priority list by April 12th. Yesterday, the sneaky NDP came out with a funding announcement that he knew would not make the Halifax Regional School Board's list, and they are barging ahead with the high school that politics built. We think that's sneaky. My question is, which priority projects on what school board's priority list will be delayed or cancelled because of the new Eastern Passage High School? Will it be the Sheet Harbour, Hants County, and who will pay for it?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We're looking forward to April the 20th when I receive the priorities of the school boards. Decisions will be made at that time. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Halifax Regional School Board, like all school boards in the province, has recently gone through the difficult process of making NDP government ordered cuts. The Halifax Regional School Board was forced to make $3.2 million in cuts, and they were told to reduce building upkeep costs. And now the school board is being saddled with ongoing maintenance costs for a new high school they never asked for, maybe preventing building a school in Sheet Harbour that could consolidate four expensive old buildings into one. Question. Since the government did an end run around the Halifax Regional School Board when it comes to capital funding for the new Eastern Passage School Board, is the minister also footing the bill for ongoing costs associated with the school?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to say that it was a wonderful day to stand with the chair and the superintendent of the Halifax Regional School Board and a number of their committee, their board members, to celebrate the fact that this government is making sure we're meeting the needs of our students. We said in our Kids and Learning First education plan that we were going to increase skilled trades education in the province. This is an opportunity to have more of our young people engaged in learning about skilled trades, and so therefore I'm very proud to stand here to say that our government does what it says it's going to do.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, youth in Nova Scotia are getting a raw deal from this NDP government. Cuts to education have a profound impact on children and youth and their futures in this province. Public education funding has been gutted by this government to the tune of $65 million over the past 2 years. Mr. Speaker, prosperity starts in the classroom, and this government is turning a blind eye to the impact that education cuts will have on the children and youth in this province and their future. When will the minister responsible for youth actually start advocating for youth and fight to reverse these massive and damaging education cuts?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There is nothing more important than our children. And this government is supporting the needs of our children. We are making more investments in our children than any other government. We are increasing our per student funding into this budget. I'd like to remind the member opposite that under the past government, there was a 43% increase of costs. Costs were going up. At the same time, maybe they should cheer, but unfortunately, the results of our evaluations showing that our students were not gaining any in their education. Actually, we were losing ground. While those costs were going up, unfortunately, our population was going down. This government is supporting the needs of our students. We're investing in our students, making sure that they have the programs and the supports that they need. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government has the nerve to cut $65 million out of our classrooms and say that they're investing in the youth and the future of this province.
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, that defies what educators are saying, that defies what parents are saying, that defies what students are saying, and it defies logic, Mr. Speaker. And the same thing is happening with our health care system. This government health care budget cuts are up to 3% this year. Youth mental health workers are being cut at the IWK. Nova Scotians haven't seen any improvement in wait times, and young people are being affected, Mr. Speaker. When the Minister of Health announced the DHA budget cuts, the minister responsible for youth remained silent. Will the minister responsible for youth tell the members of this House when she'll actually stand up for youth and fight to reverse these massive and damaging cuts to our medical system?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, but I would ask the Minister of Health to respond to a health question. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there have been no cuts to youth and children's mental health services in Nova Scotia, at the IWK, or anywhere else, Mr. Speaker. And let me repeat what I said earlier, Mr. Speaker, that when we gave the DHA their targets for a 3% reduction, they were told to protect mental health services in all of their districts. And in fact, Mr. Speaker, that is what has been done.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the fact that the Minister responsible for youth couldn't answer a question about youth speaks to the value that this government holds our youth in our province, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Community Services has decided not to support the 24/7 model for supportive housing in rural Nova Scotia. Without access to supportive housing, homeless youth are left with very limited options, Mr. Speaker. Will the minister responsible for youth finally stand up for youth and fight to reverse the Minister of Community Services decision?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I will take the opportunity a little bit later to speak to the member opposite to explain about the Youth Secretariat and what that work does. But at this particular time, I would like to ask the Minister of Community Services to answer the question on that particular point. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member certainly knows that this minister and this government cares about youth, and that's why we created a new model. But they don't understand anything new. They want to do everything the old way that doesn't work, Band-Aid approach. And with youth we're serving, these youth will have the opportunity to receive hub model support services throughout the province. Whether they decide to leave from Yarmouth, they will have that support wherever they go. But the Liberal, all they want is in one area, a Band-Aid approach, and they know that. They better get with the times.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to you will be to the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture. In a March 16 CBC.ca article, the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture said, and I quote, "We have no intention of looking seriously at a moratorium at this time or any time in the future. I'm encouraged to bring forward some factual information forward to those who have some possible concerns about aquaculture," and I'll table that piece of information. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister is this: where did the Minister find the factual information that he wants to share with those of us who have concerns about aquaculture?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Well, thank you very much, and to the member opposite, I really appreciate this question. I think the timing couldn't be better, but just to review, I have a very well-seasoned staff in the Department of Fisheries and Aquaculture that I rely on a daily basis, and we confide in our science base from our fisheries in Ottawa or in all the different departments there. So I'm very confident that any information that we talk about aquaculture is up to date. And this is something that I think that can be done in a sustainable manner, and we're there to protect the environment. Thank you very much for the question.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, early in March, the minister had this to say about the outbreak of a deadly ISA and the destroying of three pens of salmon. Quote, there's no effect on the traditional fishing industry. I can reassure you, based on scientific information, that there's no effect on the lobster industry. Human health is not in question, and I'll table that as well, Mr. Speaker. My question, can the minister please produce the scientific information he referred to that shows that ISA has no effect on the traditional fishing industry by the end of the day?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and certainly I'll ask my staff to rely on that, but the information that I rely on is on the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which is the lead agency on this, and I can tell you that we have followed protocol to the T on this issue, and I have the greatest confidence that the health of Canadians and Nova Scotians is not at risk, and more importantly, or just as importantly, the traditional fisheries, especially the lobster fisheries in that area, is not at risk. And that is with great confidence I stand here, and I thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm glad he's thankful for the question. I would have been merely thankful for an answer. You know, when it comes to aquaculture in this province, this NDP government is going to blow it if they don't get their act together, Mr. Speaker. Stakeholders have told us that in 2010, a FOIPOP relating to risk to lobster habitat, the minister's staff admitted that they did not have any scientific data, not one single piece of paper. They said that such data is held by the Federal Department of Fisheries. They said that it was held by Environment Canada and that the provincial staff have never had an opportunity to view that data. Well, Mr. Speaker, this minister has just said he's based everything on scientific fact. Will the minister admit today that this decision around aquaculture and its risks to traditional fisheries are not based
on
science?
Order, please. The time allotted for all questions put by members has elapsed. The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During question period, The leader of the opposition suggested that there was a growing number of FTEs in the Department of Education. I just wanted to table for the House's information the actual numbers with respect to the Department of Education shows 7 less FTEs this year and in the past years. I'm sure it was just an honest mistake.
Order. I'm just going to let the honourable member know that it's not a point of order. Okay, thank you. It's a difference between two members. The Honourable Leader of the Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, just to help out the Premier on a point of order, is I believe it was the increased cost in administration in the Department of Education of 30%.